You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 89 of Atheistically Speaking with your host, Thomas Smith. You know it's me because I have the boringest name in podcasting. That should be my trademark. Boringest name in podcasting. Come at you. I defy you guys to find a boringer one, a more boringerist one. So first things first, I hope you all had a fantastic Thanksgiving. I'm looking forward to going back to work and having to answer a bunch of questions about, oh, how was your Thanksgiving? Good. How was yours? Good. This could be an introvert problem. I don't know. To those of you who identify as extrovert or introvert, what do you think about that? I mean, I get so annoyed with, I mean, at least Thanksgiving, it was kind of like something happened, but every single Monday, how was your weekend? How do I answer that? I'm not interested in telling someone about the intricacies of my weekend. And not only that, because I do atheist podcasting, and that's like what consumes most of my life, I never have a good answer. So it makes it even worse for a, for someone like me, because it's like, well, I don't want to bring up the atheism thing at work. I just don't, you know, I don't want to talk about it. And so I never have a good answer. And people will be like, oh, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, you know, I don't like lying, but there's nothing to say. I don't know what you guys do. I'm just, you know, sitting around. People probably think I'm the laziest person because I never have an answer. They probably think I don't do anything. But it's like, well, if I give the true answer, it would be, well, I'm going to be editing a lot. I'm going to be coming up with stuff for my 25 different podcasts I'm doing. Oh, what podcast? I already can't do it because then they ask a question and I don't know how you guys all do it. But I guess if you don't have a podcast, if you have hobbies that are something that you can talk about, then it helps. My go-to is usually hockey. I'm just like, oh, let's see. Someone asks like, oh, what'd you do? What are you doing? I just think of like, what was my last hockey game? Okay, I'll just say that, and then that'll count as something, and then they can check that box. They don't need to know it. That took place on a, you know, on a Friday, and then I did, you know, totally different things for the whole weekend. They don't need to know that. I'll just be like, oh, well, I had a hockey game, and we lost. And then they could be like, oh, you know, okay. So I've satisfied the requirement of the conversation. Anyway, I didn't know I was going to launch into that little tirade, but I was just envisioning how Monday is going to go, and it's going to go something like that. But at least I can say, shout out to my mom, who I hope never listens to this, best Thanksgiving ever. God, my mom is so good at Thanksgiving. And, you know, various and sundry other family members helped, I think, but I didn't get a whole catalog of who did what. But, I feel very, very, very lucky, to have a family that, while I'm not too terribly close with them, I love my mom. I enjoy going back there when I do, the couple times a year that I do. I just never get around to it, I feel bad because I'm sure there are people who don't have families anymore for various terrible reasons or who, whatever it is, and who don't get to be with their family at all. And yeah, I feel bad. I probably should take advantage more of the fact that I do have a pretty good family, relatively speaking. could be a lot worse. And our gatherings are they're riddled with children that get really old. Anyway, okay, I'll stop trying to get distracted. All I meant to say was my Thanksgiving was great. How was yours? That's all I wanted to say. it was very delicious. My mom sent me home with a pumpkin pie that I, of course, have to eat a piece of every single day. So I'm sort of just accepting the fact that I'm going to gain about 10 pounds this winter. You know, it's cold. you know, I probably need it. I've already gained quite a bit from the, you know, holidays and stuff. So whatever. Once it gets a little warmer, then, you know, then I'll lose some weight again. Let's just do that. Okay. So what else to talk about? Oh, I got sick over the Thanksgiving break. You might be able to hear that still. I'm trying to battle it. I guarantee you I will be frequently pausing the recording because I don't want to trouble you guys with it. I'll do my best to catch it all, but I'll be frequently pausing and hacking up a lung in a very comedic way. Sometimes I almost want to leave it in. I won't, I promise, but sometimes I almost do because it's funny. I'll just have to stop mid-sentence and then just make a sound like just an animal getting murdered. It's just bad. But you know, that's life. That's the life of a podcaster, man. So, all right. Having dispensed with the pleasantries of the long holiday weekend, I need to address a few things from last week when I talked about Ferguson. Because I'm not going to go too much into it. First reason is I had several people recommend Bobby C. From the No Religion Required podcast because he's a retired police officer. I didn't know this. Apologies to Bobby if you're listening or to anyone. I catch very few podcasts now, so I'm not familiar with the podcast. I've seen it around. I haven't gotten to it. I don't really listen to any atheism podcasts, to be honest with you. need to keep my originality. What little originality I can, I try to keep by doing that. Also, I don't have time. But anyway, I've gotten in touch with him. He commented, so maybe Bobby's listening. Seems like a real nice guy, and I'm excited to talk to someone with some expertise. You know, enough of me. I'd be interested to get his take on that. So I'm not going to go too deep into it. However, I do need to correct one thing I said, because I had gone back and forth on this, and then I eventually just needed to record, and I kind of got the wrong impression based on something I read. Wilson was never shooting Brown from 150 feet away. I don't think I actually thought that. I just had a brain fart, and that was the last thing I read, because that wouldn't make a lot of sense. That's pretty far away. But I guess the shooting, or sorry, Brown's body ended up 150 feet from the car. And so I need to amend things I was saying, because I was giving people the wrong impression. So apparently, according to the story, people corrected me, so you probably know this, but I just want to make sure, because I don't want to put misinformation out there. That's the last thing I want to do. Apparently, allegedly, Brown just fled the fight in the car. The officer, Wilson, you know, opened the door, got out and pursued, and it ended up being like 150-foot pursuit. Now that sounds like a lot, but it's really not. It's not that far. Feet are kind of short. someone commented somewhere, like, it's just the length of like two semi trucks, kind of, you know, it's not like that far. But anyway, so he pursued him, and apparently Brown wouldn't surrender. And then turned and, according to Wilson, started to make some sort of offensive move, you know, like some sort of aggressive move, rather, would be a better word. You know, he interpreted it as charging him and apparently didn't listen to orders, or maybe Wilson didn't give orders, but one way or the other, he ended up shooting him at that time. And okay, so here's what I don't want to do. I thank you for the corrections, Mike. Some other people, various places. Mike Paps, I believe, was the first one to correct me. I always appreciate corrections. It sucks to have to read people correcting me. You know, it's never fun to be wrong. But then I realized, nope, gotta accept it because I was wrong, and I got to put out the right information. And then I thought, okay, this is tough, because I think what people do a lot in life is they go it's pretty easy to just say, okay, so, you know, so he wasn't shooting at him from 150 feet away, but still, he was, yeah. So I want to make sure that I accept this new information, which is not really new. I just kind of messed up. I sort of knew this. It's weird. I just like got a weird idea in my head at the time of recording. But anyway, accept this information, this correction, because I did present it incorrectly. I need to revise it in my mind what happened and really think about it and not already have a conclusion, because that's just kind of the sloppy way that we argue for things. I mean, if you're in a political argument or if you're in a religion argument or whatever it is, and you present the other person with new information, and everyone's guilty of this, including myself, of course, we all are. This is a very human thing because you get attached to your conclusions. So when someone presents you with new information like this, already I'm like, yeah, but well, you know, how do I convert this? You know, the primate part of my brain is like, okay, I'm in love with my conclusion here. How do I convert this information into what I was already saying to sort of minimize the fact that I was wrong? You know, I see that a ton, even among skeptics. And so I wanted to acknowledge that and try to fight that as a force and really think about what the difference is. And I still think in this, here's where I give the yeah, but still, no. It changes the picture of it, obviously. I mean, if he was just shooting him 150 feet away, he's in no danger from an unarmed man. He just isn't. I mean, for a good 100, 125 feet, he's not going to be in danger. So that's definitely different. That was a straw man interpretation of the story by me. So definitely messed that up. So I'm trying to think of it now. But still, Officer Wilson has the gun. And he still, allegedly, when he fired, was, you know, 10 feet away. So that's... You know, there's different sources, by the way, and different reports, so it's hard to know exactly what's what, but it's something like 10 feet away. So that's a little more in line with, like, okay, that could be considered justified. But then there's, like, the more than half of, or roughly half of witnesses who thought his hands were up. It gets really muddy. So in thinking about this, I'm a little worried. Like, it scares me to think, like, well, shoot, maybe, you know, if we're to believe the story of Officer Wilson, which was corroborated by some number of witnesses, like not all of them by any stretch, but a few of them, some number of them, based on that chart I had up before that I linked, but I don't have up right now because I didn't mean to talk about this for too long. It's scary to think, like, well, maybe in that situation, like, I guess if I had already shot a guy, if he ran away, you have to arrest him. You know, at this point, you can't just let him go. You know, that's not an option for Officer Wilson. So he follows him. Hopefully he was shouting instructions. I sincerely hope, not that it makes any difference on the outcome, but just so that, you know, so that Brown had a chance. And then I guess allegedly, according to his story, if Brown is ignoring those instructions, turns around and makes some sort of aggressive move. I don't know. I guess maybe I could see how a jury would think, like, well, yeah, what else do you do? You know, it's weird. And so at the same time though, like, I don't know. Couldn't he have backed up? Is there nothing he could have done? I don't know. At this point, this is why this is a frustrating situation, because you feel like there had to have been something Wilson could have done. There had to have been some other way he could have handled it. There has to have been. But I wasn't there. I don't know. And though the witnesses, several witnesses make it much worse, you know, like, he had his hands up, he wasn't charging, he turned. He simply turned to say, like, okay, I give up. I think someone even thought he said, I give up. You know, like, so if that's true, then yeah, like, then there's our case. But it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what do you expect? How do you expect a jury to look at things? And how, and maybe this will be questions I'll ask Bobby if he comes on, or when he comes on. We're scheduled to record, so I'm looking forward to that. But how, and by the way, I have no idea where he stands on this, and I kind of prefer to keep it that way. I don't want to, like, I don't want to either already agree or have to pretend I disagree. I'm just going to ask him stuff. So I'm going to prepare some questions, sort of ask him. But How do you react? How does a, if you are in a grand jury and it's your job to try to evaluate this thing, and you're presented all this, and it looks like, I mean, it kind of looks like the officer's story could be true. Well, I guess here's the answer to that question. If you're a grand jury, I think you need to say, well, there's enough here that we need to have a trial. That's the key. Now, if the grand jury had said, yes, we need to have a trial, and then given a real prosecutor, which of course is the a major issue here, there was no real prosecution, given a real prosecutor and all the evidence scrutinized as far as it could be in a real trial, if then people were like, there's enough reasonable doubt that we can't say he just murdered him. It seems like it's very possible that his story checks out and that was the only thing he could do, or it's at least fairly possible, you know, reasonable doubt. Then it would be different. But I think with the grand jury, I'd have to say there's still enough, there's so much doubt there that I would have hoped they would have ruled to at least press charges and see where that went. So I already talked for too long on that because like I said, I want to talk about it later. But to sum up real quickly, I mean, it's worrying to think like, well, maybe his story does check out. And then I think I haven't gotten that many comments. I did get one from Emily. And I want to read this one real quick. You don't need jury tampering. This was an, I had an open question. I wasn't sure whether or not you had to find jurors who hadn't heard anything about the case. And Emily says, you don't need jury tampering. It wasn't a trial. It was to assess whether or not they were going to indict. The prosecutor threw the case, as typo, I guess, threw the case, I'm guessing. And just in case, they had 9-3 racial ratio. I don't know what to say about that. It's random. So, and us skeptics know that random doesn't mean it will end up being exactly the racial breakdown of your society. I mean, it's actually pretty unlikely that if you take a random sample one time, especially with only 12, if you're only choosing 12, the odds that you will end up with exactly the racial makeup of the community is unlikely. So there, I can't really say like, oh, that was some intentional thing, because it's totally likely that it would come up like 9-3, or, you know, it's reasonable. So, but anyway, Emily continues, the police and justice system in Ferguson don't deserve us giving them the benefit of the doubt. They've already abused their powers on multiple occasions. The press was not the issue here. I'm not sure what that's about. Is that, I don't know. In fact, they did better on Ferguson than they have in many other issues, though admittedly that doesn't say much. I'm not sure, Emily, if that was directed at me or another commenter. I can't think of exactly anything I've said that addresses, and I'm in no way saying you're not making a good point. I can't think of what that's about. So apologies on that. And please feel free to clarify. I completely agree with the need for us to demilitarize the police, as well as provide better training, de-escalation techniques, education about mental health, psychological testing, cameras on every officer. That is the number one thing for me. Cameras on every goddamn officer. It's easy. It'll prevent these things. I think it will prevent a large number of these things. I think it will also provide us the ammunition to indict or charge officers in these things. I think it's a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. There's some like privacy concerns I saw someone brought up or something like that. But I mean, they're already required to have dashboard cams in most states. And that seems to be fine. Every study I've seen or article I've seen about the cameras on every officer has said it's led to nothing but good effects. I don't know. I did read some sort of privacy concern. I'm not too terribly concerned about it. Let me know if you disagree on that, whoever that was. I think it might have been a listener to this show sent that. So feel free to resubmit that if you want. But anyway, yeah, I totally agree, Emily. Strict regulations, monitoring of those cameras. We also need a separate entity to investigate the police. Police investigating police is completely absurd. I have some sympathy with the feelings, but not actions, of some of those who are rioting. Not for the idiots acting out for reasons similar to those at the Pumpkin Festival. I don't know what that is. But the rioters who are similar to the rioters in the Rodney King riots. Imagine if you live in a society where your life is considered meaningless, where you can be harassed and killed over literally nothing, and there will be no justice, where you feel like you have no future. Psychologically speaking, it makes sense why someone would lash out in that manner. Yeah, sure. I guess I still, there's just no, okay. And I want to talk about this because this is something I'm not really going to talk about with Bobby that I know of. When I made the comments about the looting, I was simply replying to people who were proactively saying, if you care at all about, you know, if you're even mentioning the looting, you're racist because you need to care more about the injustice. And I talked at length about that. And I just want to say, someone pointed out, oh, the looters aren't the same as the protesters. They aren't the same people. It's like, yeah, okay, that may all be true. That may be true. Emily's analysis of people's mindsets may be true. That may all be true. But still, you know, people die in riots and people die in fires and, you know, innocent people die. All I'm saying is it's not right for more innocent people to pay for, you know, two wrongs do not make a right. That's all I'm saying. I think that, and I more wanted to point out that I understand why people are very wary of people who just talk about the looters and just talk about, there are definitely a lot of racists, like people who appear to be racists, who just take the time to criticize the looting and the rioting. And not even say anything about the injustice and the police and the everything that Emily mentioned, essentially. And I understand that. I understand the negative reaction to that. So I was doing my best to try to address both things because I just one doesn't make the other right and the other doesn't make the other right. You know, it's not a zero sum game to me. And I bet it's likely that excuse me. I bet it's very likely that the protesters are mostly peaceful. And the looters are probably unrelated. They're probably just taking advantage of the situation. So, and I hope that's true because it strengthens the cause and it makes the protests look better. And, I hope that's all true. I'm just saying it was purely a response to several tweets I saw that were almost just condoning violence in the name of whatever your cause is. It's like, I can't accept that. But anyway, I think I've covered that enough. All right, there I go again, talking way too much about something. It's just hard because it's such a tough issue and there's a lot going on. But anyway, what I wanted to say, that's what I wanted to say that I started. So I will continue slightly. Emily and like one other person are the only people I saw who commented sort of on the anti-police side. I don't want to characterize Emily as that, but sort of on the, you know, what would you say on the anti-police violence sort of, in this case, pro indictment of Wilson side, I'll say. I had a lot of people comment on the sort of, and they were good comments. They were like, well, I was totally in favor of indictment until I looked at the evidence and it just kind of looked like, yeah, maybe his story checks out. And I'm sympathetic to that, but I'm worried because most of my Twitter friends that I kind of have, it's pretty much all people who were totally pro indictment. And I worry now that I don't have I don't have good representation in the comments I'm getting. So please speak up if you were very disappointed with the outcome. And especially if you have any, comments or anything you can address to what I've said and you were pro indictment, I want to hear from you because it troubles me that I'm seeing such a difference in what I've seen on Twitter and who's commenting on my show. It could just totally be nothing. Like it could just be happenstance. But I'm wondering about that. But I will say one of the reasons could be everyone I've seen on Twitter who's just totally anti-Wilson, and pro indictment and all that, it's very rhetoric based. I can't say I've seen a lot of people really break down the evidence presented in the trial. I'm sure it's out there. And then say, okay, here's why there still needed to be an indictment, despite, there could be some doubt. I haven't seen a lot of that. What I see is, can you believe this guy? Can you believe that, you know, he's murdered an unarmed black man? Can you, like, just the rhetoric, you know, stuff that's, you know, I'm sympathetic to, but it sort of doesn't have an argument behind it. And I'm wondering if maybe some people on that side haven't looked at all the evidence with any sort of charitable view, or is it made up in their? I really want to know. I'm very curious. I'm curious how this is a very straightforward issue, because I don't see it as that. I see a lot of the wider issues of police, you know, militarization and racism. Those are pretty straightforward. But this specific case with this specific officer, I'm just curious if anyone out there thinks I'm wrong on that. I don't see it as like terribly straightforward. Okay. All right. I'm done with that. Geez, I wanted to do this show about something else. All right, so let's get to that something else. I'm going to play some Tom and Terry music. It's been so long since we've heard that. I sometimes forget when I tomentate. Yeah, commentate. Yeah. when I tomentate about stuff, I sometimes forget to play that music. But I should. It's my Tom and Terry. It's not really music, because it's just sort of a drum beat, but which I don't even remember making, but I did make it. I just plugged something in and was like, oh, let's try this. And it was, it's kind of cool. Anyway, so this is actually what I meant to talk about before the Ferguson thing happened. I don't know if you guys saw, and again, my throat, I apologize. It's absolutely dying, but I just don't know what to do. I mean, I got to record. I've paused several billion times already. But I've artfully done it, so hopefully you couldn't tell. And I'm drinking water, you know, so I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do what I can, but I'm pretty sick apparently. So, but anyway, thank you for people who are sticking with me. I hope my voice is not too annoying right now. So maybe you saw Ayaan Hirsi Ali, and this is now about a week and a half old. Like I said, it was going to be last week. It was pretty fresh news last week, but it was a week and a couple days old. Ayaan Hirsi Ali slams feminism trivial BS. And I'll just go ahead and read a brief article describing what happened if you didn't hear about it. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, a harsh critic of Islam's treatment of women, said Wednesday that modern American feminism is focused on trivial bullshit and needs to be reclaimed. Speaking at the, and this is from the, sorry, I should have referenced, this was, this, what I'm reading is from the Washington Examiner. These are not my words. This is a description of an interview, sorry, no, at a speech Ayaan Hirsi Ali made at the Independent Women's Forum. Woman of Valor is what she won, an award. So she gave a speech accepting the award, and this is a description of that. Speaking at the, well, I just read that. Hirsi Ali reminded her audience how far feminism has strayed from its original purpose. Quote, I want you to remember that once upon a time, feminists fought for the access, basic right, access of girls to education, she said. Hirsi Ali, who despite the harsh words, she said, spoke softly, almost timidly, told the story of a fight between her mother and father when she was about 11 years old. Her mother wanted to take her and her sister out of school because education would lead them to rebel against their family and bring shame upon us. Her father responded by saying, if you take my girls out of school, I'm going to curse you and you're going to burn in hell. Taken out of context, Hirsi Ali said one might side with her mother, but in reality, she said it was her father that allowed her to be educated and that helped her make what she is today. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but here we go. A little bit more. That's what, quote, that's what feminists used to fight for access for girls to education. They used to fight for the recognition of girls as fellow human beings and recognition of their personal liberty. She spoke of growing up in Somalia, where women aren't allowed to leave the house without asking permission from a male guardian and need to be accompanied by a male guardian. If something wrong were to happen to me and where I come from, that happened all the time. If you were groped, if you were harassed, you were raped, you had no recourse because you weren't supposed to be where you were, end quote. She goes on, you were married off as a child and you had to obey the person that you were married to. Okay, I'll cut off there. this didn't get a ton of attention, oddly enough. And I think it is because of the Ferguson thing. I think that most people were reacting to that news. So I sort of fell in the herd with that because I did mean to talk about this and, you know, sort of got interrupted. But I did find a Patheos blog. This is Vlad Chetuk. Could be totally wrong pronunciation. The channel is, you know, whatever. Yeah, no, it is a channel. It's called Nonprofit Status. Profit spelled like profit, not profit. So that, yeah. But anyway, and that was like one of the few things, because I was Googling all over. I wanted to sort of see what people were saying about this. And there honestly is not a lot. Like, there's people sort of let this one go. And we'll see. Maybe people will return to it, or maybe once you miss your spot in the news cycle, maybe you're free to go. This seems to be a pretty clear case of the Dear Muslima point of view, you know, the famous thing that Dawkins wrote, like, how dare you complain about such and such because, you know, there are women who get raped and a lot of, you know, in the Islamic world, quote unquote, that things are much worse. And the odd thing is also, Dawkins had some comments, over that same time span. And the article on Patheos, which I'll link, talks about both of them because he said, "I don't take back anything I've said." Dawkins said from a shady spot in the leafy backyard of one of his Bay Area supporters. Quote, "I would not say it again, however, because I am now accustomed to being misunderstood. So I will ... He trailed off momentarily, gazing at his hands resting on a patio table. Quote, "I feel muzzled, and a lot of other people do as well," he continued. "There is a climate of bullying, a climate of intransigent thought police, which is highly influential in the sense that it suppresses people like me." There's more. Dawkins is, he said, "not a misogynist, as some critics have called him, but a passionate feminist. The greatest threats to women, in his view, are Islamism and jihadism. And his concern over that sometimes leads to him to speak off the cuff." This is the worst quote here. Quote, "I concentrate my attention on that menace, and I confess I occasionally get a little impatient with American women who complain of being inappropriately touched by the water cooler or invited for coffee or something, which I think is by comparison relatively trivial," end quote. I don't know what's going on here. This is so frustrating with Dawkins because this seems to be, there's no reason to keep making excuses. I mean, this seems to be his point of view. And here's why these things are different. I wanted to bring up both these things because in one case we have Ayaan Hirsi Ali saying, like, you know, look at how things work. But she's actually lived it. She's actually lived conditions that were far worse and gone through a lot. So the difference I wanted to look at and just sort of get everyone to think about, just think about the difference between Ayaan, who has lived this horrible thing, comes to a better country eventually, but, you know, by way of some other country. You know, she took a long journey to get here. Theo Van Gogh was killed. You know, lots of things happened. I'm not going to summarize her life right now, but she eventually gets to where she's doing okay. She's in a better place. She's not, you know, under the threat of Islam anymore. Though she was a victim of FGM, you know, like, and many other things. And then she looks at the feminist movement in this country, and she was contrasting what she went through to the Shirtgate incident. And she just thought, a shirt, I can't believe people are complaining about a shirt, you know? And while I disagree, and I do think that, people are totally okay, you know, people are completely allowed, to complain about things like, for example, being inappropriately touched by a water cooler or what, because that's the life we live here. I mean, we have a better life in this country, largely than people who are living under Islam. I mean, in these barbaric countries, you know, in where FGM is the normal practice. I mean, we have things better. I can sort of sympathize with someone who lived there saying, I can't believe this. Like, things used to be so bad, but you guys are complaining about a shirt. You know, I can understand that. I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. You know, she went through worse. Maybe she is speaking like we need to be citizens of the world, you know, like that. We need to, you know, if we're thinking, and this is me putting words in her mouth, I don't know if this is what she thinks, but in trying to relate to what she's saying, I'm thinking maybe she's thinking we need to care more about these other countries. You know, she's not an American by birth, you know, she's probably, I don't even think she's an American citizen. I don't, I'm not sure. But anyway, maybe she's advocating for us to care more about these bigger problems, you know, and you could do the same thing with food. Like, sure, there's hunger in our country. There's hunger in the U.S., but look at how much worse things are. Maybe our resources could save more lives in different countries than they could here. This is me trying to give a very charitable treatment of what she's saying. And I can, like I said, I still disagree with it, because if someone is inappropriately touching you by the water cooler, which was, by the way, Dawkins, not her words, but just to use that as an example, then they're wrong. You know, they're doing something wrong to you, and you're right to complain about it. There's no like, oh, well, look at what worse things happen. People get raped. Like, therefore don't complain. Like that, I have no sympathy for that. But I do sort of have sympathy for Ayaan's point of view here and what she's been through and why she would say this. I think it's a very different thing for Dawkins to do it, because he is completely an outsider to all this. He's not a woman, obviously, and he's not been through either of these situations. He's not grown up as a woman in an Islamic country, and he's not grown up as a woman in the U.S. So for him and for me, you know, and for other men, we have to look at this situation with just empathy, and we have to think about it, and we have to listen, we have to evaluate what's going on. And for him to just declare like, ah, you complainers in the U.S., you know, like, it's much worse under Islam, like that, I don't accept it from him. I accept it from Ayaan, and I sort of understand it, though I would, you know, if I could talk to her, if I could speak with her, I would try to argue against what she's saying, but I at least understand it. With Dawkins, I don't get it. How could you say you get impatient? Like, how? He's really lost me. I mean, I've tried so hard to stay with him, and I still love his books, and I'm never going to be like, you know, I'm probably never going to have like the outrage and ire at Dawkins that I see, because I don't know why. I'm just not really that way. But he really has lost me. Like, with these comments specifically, he would have to issue like one hell of a retraction and an apology for me to think like, okay, this was misquoted, or, you know, because like, God, I mean, if he had just said the invited for coffee thing, like maybe it would still seem kind of appropriate. But like, when he says being inappropriately touched by the water cooler, like essentially a sexual assault, I mean, of some kind, like it's okay for men to do that because other men are doing worse things somewhere. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So it's okay for me to just grope somebody because, like, hey, you could live in Africa where things suck. So yeah, I get to grope you. Dawkins says so. Like, I don't know. And maybe he meant it differently. I'm at a loss. I really don't know. I really don't know how you could interpret his words here to not just be pretty horrible. Like, in the past, it's been, well, there's, you know, if I take it this way, if I apply some charity, maybe it's okay. These comments, I don't get it. So I thought that was very interesting, because I do view those things as different. I'm curious what you think. And just to read some more of Ayaan's perspective, I also saw she did a little article of what she's thankful for, and this sort of illustrates more of her point of view. This Thanksgiving, and this was in Time.com. This Thanksgiving, I'm grateful for the things that we take for granted as women living in democratic countries such as the U.S. Violence against women and girls is universal. Worldwide, the number of women who suffer from some sort of physical or emotional abuse, sexual assault or rape, kidnapping, female genital mutilation, or forced marriage is staggering. In many places, it is justified by religion, culture, or tradition, leaving women and girls with nowhere to turn. But in the U.S., we have laws that protect us, lawyers that defend us, press that condemn our abusers. Feminists would argue that we don't quite have all that. We have civil action groups that protect our reproductive rights. We have medical professionals who treat us. We have a community that supports our rights as human beings. Now imagine if by law, one, you need permission from a male gardener. That changes that. You need permission from a male gardener. You have to find specifically a male gardener. You need permission from a male guardian to step out of your home. Two, you can't drive. Three, you have to wear a veil and be fully covered. Four, you are forced into a marriage and you may be as young as 9 years old. The law in Iran and Saudi Arabia. Five, you receive a divorce but leave with no assets. Six, you are subjected to polygamy. Seven, you are subjected to female genital mutilation. Eight, you inherit half of what your brother inherits. Nine, your testimony in court is worth half of that of your rapist. Cat, that's great court system. Did you rape that girl? No. The girl says yes. Well, it's 1 to 0.5. So I guess you didn't rape her. Oh, awesome. That's a perfect court system. Well done. Your murder in 10, your murder is a lesser crime because you were killed in the name of honor. It is not only the state, but a whole society that has declared war on you because you are a woman. Women who are fighting in Saudi Arabia for the right to drive are mocked in the press, condemned by the clerics, and ridiculed by male drivers. Women who resist their rapist are imprisoned, tortured, and put to death like Rayana Jabari in Iran. Fathers sell their daughters to the highest bidder. Girls are denied an education. And it goes on. And this is, I mean, if Dawkins had presented it as things are, if he had been at all sympathetic, if he had said like, it doesn't need to be either or for Dawkins. Now for Ayaan, it also doesn't need to be either or, but I can accept it a little bit because when you've lived through trauma, when you've seen it firsthand, it's harder to look at people who have it way better and not say like, what are you talking about? Things are way worse in the world. But for Dawkins, he hasn't lived it. He needs to be, I think, and let me know in the comments what you guys think about this. This is my central thesis. For someone like Dawkins, he needs to at least say, yes, feminism, it is inappropriate when these certain things happen. It is inappropriate when, rapists get off or people don't, whatever. Name your feminist issue in this country. Yes, that's inappropriate. However, we all should focus on these far worse things around the world. There may be people who would disagree with him, but at least he's paid his respects to the current movement and he hasn't belittled anyone. So that's my central point I want to get across with this. I read these two things. These quotes came around the same time. And Ayaan, I kind of accept, and Dawkins, I don't. I think it was a horrible quote, and I don't know why he said it. So that's what I think. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off for this episode. And I will see you guys next time. And I'm looking forward to, I think next week we will have Bobby. So I will not, next episode, no Ferguson talk, I promise. And then we'll go from there. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. Apologies for my sick voice. And also, please check out the first episode of Comedy Shoeshine. Just go to comedyshoeshine.com and check it out. Or go to the Facebook / Shoeshine, I think it is. Or that's the Patreon or whatever. Search Comedy Shoeshine. Anyway, just find it. Just go to your computer machine and find it. It was a very funny episode. Pure comedy, not at all related to my atheism. And that's so if you're not interested in that, then you're not interested in that. And that's okay. But if you are, I promise you it's very funny. I think it's going to be very good. So check that out. It should be out right now as you're listening to this. So thank you very much. And I will talk to you guys on Thursday.